comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
Hi, folks, and welcome to the Kevin Smith Show. Whoever you are, wherever you are, all around this beautiful, beautiful place we call Earth, thanks for being here. It's talk radio like nowhere else on Earth, and it's the show where you matter. Tonight is K-Files night. That means that immediately after the show tonight, we will begin sending out this week's edition of the K-Files. That is our free weekly newsletter. Let me say that with emphasis on a different word. That is our free weekly newsletter. And when we say free, we don't. I don't use Washington D.C. speak. Here at the Kevin Smith Show, when we say something, it means what we said. It really is free. There are no strings attached. Okay, and if you haven't subscribed, you can do so by going to my website, kevinsmithshow.com. Just click on the link that says K-Files e-zine and subscribe, and then you'll get this week's edition. You can unsubscribe anytime you want to. Also, it's been a long time coming, but we have a new handbook for Kevinites. So some of you have written to me and said, yeah, I'd like to be a Kevinite. Please send me the information. And some of you sent that to me some time back. And we didn't send it, and we didn't send it because we had a new handbook in preparation. So it's ready, and those that I have on the mailing list as Kevinites, I will email these to you. If I do not have you on the mailing list as a Kevinite, I can't email it to you. So if you don't get it over the weekend, then you need to send me an email and say, hey, what's the deal? I'm a Kevinite, or I want to be a Kevinite, and I didn't get it. And by reply, we will send it to you, okay? And I want to thank everyone who is a Kevinite. You are helping us to get the word out even broader and bigger than ever before about the Kevin Smith Show. And I want you to know that I appreciate it. Also, we have new folks that join us each night. And I want to tell you that, you know, it is free to listen to the show. And we're glad that you drop in and listen to the show. But there's a whole bunch more stuff in the members area. In the members area, and it's expensive now. It's 23 cents a day. But in the members area, you get to watch the show. You get, or you can, if you can't catch it live, if your schedule doesn't permit that, you can then watch the latest show. And then there are our archives. We call them K-Pods. There's a library of free ebooks that you can just download. They're yours. Video Galaxy, chat, forums. Seems like there's some other stuff I can't even remember. But there's a lot of stuff in the members area. But it's 23 cents a day. And, you know, that's less expensive than your next cup of coffee. So if you're not a member, today's the day. We'll be back with Jose Escamilla right after this. My guest this evening is no stranger to the Kevin Smith Show audience, and certainly no stranger to the UFO community at large. His name is Jose Escamilla, and within the UFO community, we know him as a rather major filmmaker in our genre. And he has both been a guest on the show and then in a special video chat in our members area where he shared with us some preliminary or previews, not preliminary, but some previews of his movie that at that time was just about to be released. And it's the movie Luna. Jose Escamilla, welcome back to the show.
Kevin, it's good to be back. How are you, my friend?
I am doing well. You know, over the years, you've produced and released to the world some rather amazing videos. Among them, Roswell Rods, Moon Rising, Luna, and several others, but one of the ones that you released that really had a big impact is UFO, Greatest Story Ever Denied. And it's my understanding that you're remaking this film and doing it in high definition. And it is my understanding that you're just about finished with it. Now, is that correct?
Yes, sir. And I'm really, really excited about this new version of that of my original film because, you know, Kevin, at the time when I produced that film in 2006, I didn't have the computer system at that time to give it justice. I mean, I did that on a computer that was, like, way out of, you know, it was real slow, and it, you know, I wasn't able to produce it in high definition at that time. It was just you know, what I had to work with at that moment. But, man, I've got to say, the new version is really, really great, man. And I usually don't brag about my stuff like this, you know, but I'm really proud of the way the film has come out in high definition. I've added an enormous amount of things that I was unable to do back then, of course. You know, at that time, we weren't caught up with what's happening today, you know, 2006, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But, I have some added scenes in there. I've got Ed Grimsley in it. I've got a lot of infrared footage in there from, you know, taken of late. And other content, too, that is just amazing. And I think what viewers are going to enjoy for the first time is a film that's finally come full circle. I mean, it's been seen by a lot of people worldwide. Over 12 million people have viewed this movie.
So this is not just an HD version of the previous film. This really is a new film.
Yes. What I've done is I've re-edited some of the content from the original. I've kept pacing and everything else in there. But I've added an enormous amount of new footage and scenes that it just make it a well-rounded film now. It's a lot better. Anyone that's ever seen my first movie, UFO, The Greatest Story, the original, big difference. It's huge, you know. And I'm really excited and proud of that. And unfortunately, I was trying to upload it to YouTube right now so that you were going to have a time to view it, to view at least the first rough, you know, final draft of it. But the computer system crashed, I guess, due to whatever's happening with YouTube. But it'll be up there tonight for you to view.
Yeah, you know, I saw I really don't know the details, but I just saw there was something on the news about YouTube being sued, and the headline said, "Could this mean the end of YouTube?" So I don't know.
Yeah, it's really weird, huh? It's pretty strange.
Well, let me ask you, for those who have not seen your first version of this, give us a little synopsis of it. What are we going to be looking at?
Okay, the reason I made the film in the first place was because in 2001, 2002, ABC came out with a TV special called UFOs, You know, it was supposed to be the epitome of UFO specials. Peter Jennings was in it, and, you know, everybody was looking forward to it, including myself, because I felt that it was time that somebody did an honest, upfront, honest-to-goodness TV special about the UFO phenomenon, you know, without the usual stuff that they put up there. And the first hour was fantastic. We presented our case. You know, you had Stanton Friedman, you had all these UFO eyewitnesses and film footage and everything else. But then the second hour, ABC comes back and has all the debunkers coming on and destroys everything that was presented in the first hour. So it still put the UFO phenomenon in that precarious position of being, well, is it real or is it not? You know, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't appreciate that. I thought it was an insult, you know. So I said, you know what? I'm going to once and for all produce a movie that nails it, that tells exactly what the people need to know as to what happened with the UFO phenomenon, why there's so much ridicule and fantasy surrounding it, and, you know, show how the government created, you know, the myth about UFOs, how they've lied to the American and world public, and, you know, that kind of movie. You're not going to see that on ABC anytime soon. You know, in fact, my film that I'm presenting now has never been bought or put on any of the channels or the networks, and I wonder why, because it spells it out for you. So that's why I produced the film in the first place, because it was, you know, it needed to be done. It needed to be shown how the UFO myth was created by our own government and the military. And it's done pretty well. I mean, over 12 million people worldwide have seen it since then. Unfortunately, I put it out, Kevin, on pay-per-view way back then. This is in 2006. You know, we had these servers in Arizona.
Yeah.
And, man, I thought I had finally done it. I thought I was going to make enough money to where I could make other movies and just be happy, you know. We got 280,000 hits on October 17th, the day this movie was released. And it was $11.95 per view, pay-per-view. So I go, my gosh. No, we've made enough money here now so I can really make some serious movies and feature films and continue producing these. Well, it turned out it was 280,000 viruses that hit the server in Arizona. Okay, there was a lot of people that were very angry with me because they had paid the $11.95 and gotten to see nothing because these 280,000 viruses hit the server. It was like a cumulative attack. And on top of that, whoever hacked into the servers at that time, I thought it was the CIA. I was told by some of the disclosure people it was the Ivy League of the CIA, whoever's in charge of, you know, smearing everything. It just really devastated me because I had put everything I had into that film at that time. And it just created more problems. Then somebody hacked the same film, and at that time I was putting my rough cuts onto the same servers because the servers were real fast, Evan, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And somebody pulled out the rough cut that was totally unmixed. In other words, my sound design guy said, look, Jose, put up the film up there, but do not mix it. Do not, you know, try to mix the music and the voice. Just put everything at 0 decibels, and I'll take it from there. I will do the remix of the soundtrack, and then I'll upload it, and then you can put that into the film. It'll be 5:1 surround, everything. It was going to be really cool. Well, that was hacked. And, you know, since 2006, this film has been online for free, you know, on hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of websites. One YouTube channel alone has 1.8 million hits viewing of the film, but everybody loves it. So I decided, you know what, I need to remake the film the way I wanted it to now that I've got the computer system. And that's what I've just done, and I've upgraded it, I've updated a lot of the footage, and I think people are going to really, really enjoy it. And I'm really proud of it. I mean, I just watched it. I was up all night, you know, doing the final touches on the main content, and I'm really excited about it.
Well, let me ask you about, in the film, you deal with something that we call the tether incident, right?
Yes, sir.
That's one of the most interesting pieces of film that NASA ever released. And they've done everything they possibly can to explain away the objects that we see. They say it's ice flecks, and I don't know what else they've said it is. That just doesn't wash. How do you deal with it in this film?
Well, what I've done with the tether incident in the film, I presented the tether the way it was, you know, originally presented in the original film. But recently, UFO hunters, of all things, Bill Byrne is a friend of mine. I love Bill Byrne. He's a great guy and everything else. But UFO hunters and the History Channel, the TV, TV series, they try to debunk. I mean, I saw this on UFO Hunters. I go, I can't believe they're debunking the tether footage. They're saying it's nothing but lens flares and light aberrations caused by whatever, the camera lens, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And the guy that did the whole thing, his name is John Tyndall, whom I recently met, you know, about a month ago. My partner and I went over to his house. Great guy. He's a professor. He's a scientist type of guy. But they had him try to eliminate the tether incident as being nothing more than mere lens flares and light artifacts. Well, I address that in the movie now, and I show how there's no way, okay? They've tried to debunk it, and you're going to see it in my film. I totally bring it forth in a very intelligent and scientific way. But there's no way those are lens flares or light artifacts. Those things are real.
And well, I mean, you're a movie guy. You're a filmmaker. You know what a lens flare looks like.
Absolutely.
And you know what artifacts in the lens would look like. One of the things that really, 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 I've heard that before about it being artifacts, and I've also heard that it's ice chips. But one of the things that is just too interesting to let it pass is that all those objects are shaped almost identically. It's kind of the donut with a notch at the back. And now we've got, 30 lens flares that are all shaped the same, or we've got 30 artifacts all shaped the same.
There's more like 200 or 300.
Yeah.
Of them. I mean, there's so many, it's hard to count. Plus, a friend of mine that was in my movie Moon Rising last year, his name is Kerry Martinek. He got the software, got a hold of the software that does motion tracking. And it's a program where you can attach, what he did is he attached each one of these circular objects that are swarming around the tether. And he puts this algorithm on it. And what happens is it shows you the path that these things are flying. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I put in the film, was the motion tracking evidence of these things. And the amazing part is it shows the trajectories of these things. Some of these things, of course, on the original footage, you're looking at stuff that was taken in the ultraviolet and infrared light spectrums. There's another thing NASA doesn't tell you. This is one thing UFO hunters did not address, was that these objects that you're seeing were not taken with a regular film camera or a camcorder situation. They were taken using specially made cameras that film only objects that appear in the infrared and ultraviolet light spectrums, which means it's invisible to the naked eye. So the astronauts, when they're saying, hey, what are you guys seeing? The astronauts only see the Earth, and they see the tether far off in space, that it's there because the tether's not invisible,
Yeah.
What they're not seeing are the things that are being picked up by the ultraviolet infrared cameras. And that's the feed that NASA's getting. So they're asking them, NASA, what do you see? They say, there's the tether stuff. And then the other guy that's talking, he's talking from Australia. He said, it's a little bit of debris that follows us, and, that's all that is. Trying to explain it away as ice debris. But there's no ice that is registered in the ultraviolet or infrared zone, because infrared and ultraviolet only register things that emit heat, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the things that JQ Public is not aware of.
Well, I have to tell you something. I had never heard before that film was shot with infrared. I had never heard that.
Yeah, they never presented that, because that would eliminate the ice debris theory. Right off the bat, that eliminates anything that's ice.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And what's cool about this footage that Terry Martinek put together with the tracking and tracing of each one of these objects, you can actually see objects that stop in midair, and they make a U-turn. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I present in the film. Plus, there are other objects that are stationary. They don't move at all. The tether is right there, and then you have four or five other objects that are stationary, while all these other things are swarming the tether, flying in all different directions and trajectories. There's some objects that are just static. And on top of that, too, you have to realize that the tether, all these objects that are doing incredible maneuvers, and all these objects that are stationary next to the tether, everything is happening at 17,500 miles per hour, orbiting Earth. And see, that's another thing they didn't address in UFO Hunters. They said, look, this tether and these objects are all traveling, orbiting around Earth, along with the shuttle cameras and the shuttle, at 17,500 miles per hour. It's not a scene where they're just sitting there.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying, Kevin? And that right there brings up another incredible fact about the whole scene that you're looking at. Everything is traveling at 17,500 miles per hour, and they're all doing these trajectories. If it was only ice crystals, they would have disappeared quickly.
Yeah, you would think so. Yeah.
Yeah.
Listen, we have a break coming up. I want to continue talking about the tether a little bit when we come back, because I remember when that happened, you could see that tether glowing from Earth. You could stand right here on Earth and look up and see that tether glowing. And I remember seeing it. And I want to talk a little bit about that and the importance of that. I don't think it was a mistake that it broke. I think that was planned. But we have to take a break. We'll get to that when we get back from this break. Ladies and gentlemen, Jose Escamilla, my guest this evening. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back. My guest this evening is Jose Escamilla. And when we went away for break, Jose, I was saying that I wanted to discuss the whole thing about the tether incident just a little bit more before we move on. And the reason for that, I can remember seeing the tether glowing in the night sky. You could see it from Earth. Now, this thing was about as big around as a matchstick. It wasn't very big. And they never really explained exactly what it is they were trying to do. They had a thing about the size of a big beach ball attached to the tether, and they were streaming it out behind the shuttle. And then when the tether was about 12 miles long, I believe, it broke. And the tether went recoiling out into space. Well, the next time we see it, it starts to glow. You know, when they came around the Earth and came back around to where the tether was, or the general position, they were about 90 miles away from it. When they filmed it, they were about 90 miles away, and yet you could see it. It was glowing, and you could see it from Earth. What was the deal with that? Are you there, Jose? Well, perhaps we've lost him.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
That was weird. Basically, what the tether was, as a matter of fact, in the film, in UFO The Greatest Story, I'm addressing all this. If you look up the word tether, I mean, you have to realize NASA, for the whole spacecraft program, has worked with metaphors, okay? There's a lot of things that people don't realize. I mean, when you look up the word tether, as a matter of fact, the definition, tether means rounding up the animals, okay? It's a curious thing. I found this and I go, oh my gosh, the name tether means it's the rope that rounds up the animals, okay?
All right.
The tether itself was basically a Tesla coil, producing hundreds and hundreds of volts in space that, according to what NASA was doing, they were testing out a way of creating energy, enough energy or electrical energy in space without having to use batteries and fuel, you know, to power the shuttle and all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Well, whatever this thing was, when they were dragging the tether and it was producing all this voltage, it was upsetting the plasma. Okay, of the plasmic area of the vacuum of space, where these creatures, and I'm saying they're creatures, I think these are living entities, bioorganisms that exist up in the upper vacuum of space, it disrupted their vacuum, their living quarters. So these things, I believe, and I have footage that I show, where it appears these things attacked the tether and made it disconnect in an attempt to stop it from disrupting the plasma of the vacuum.
So you have it on film, you have it on video where these things attacked the tether and made it disconnect?
It appears that they attacked the tether and made it disconnect. You can see them. Okay, and they're translucent. Remember, these things are invisible. They're not visible with the naked eye, but they were filming the tether with ultraviolet because the ultraviolet was going to reveal the kind of heat signature that this thing, this tether, was going to deliver.
Well, now, was it ultraviolet or infrared?
It was shot with ultraviolet and infrared cameras.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And the reason being is because they wanted to get enough of a heat signature type of data visually, and with the infrared camera, you could register the type of heat it was emitting.
Okay.
That's why it became so brilliant and bright. It looks like it's about, you know, it's 80 or 90 nautical miles away from the from the shuttle as it floats off, and it's extended because the thing was still on. I mean, the power unit was that circular thing on the tether. You know, the thing you said was like...
It really was bright, though, because you could see it from Earth.
Yeah, that was the power. The power generator was the round thing, and for whatever reason, these things swarmed on it. One of two things. Either it was like feed frenzy. Maybe it emitted the kind of electrical energy that these things thrive on, and that's why they were attracted to it. Remember, the tether means rope the animal, you know, gathering the animals.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe this is what attracted it to them, or maybe that's why they attacked it, just to stop it from generating, disrupting their precious vacuum area of space, you know, where they exist. Maybe it was disrupting them, you know? It's my conceptual theory, but, you know, I think there's something to that.
Well, do you think that these, you said you think they're living entities. Do you think that they ever come down into the atmosphere and fly around, swim around in our atmosphere, or do they stay in space all the time?
No. I have footage. I have infrared and night vision footage. Wait till you see the film, Kevin. It's going to freak you out, man. There's a lot of people out there. There's a new YouTube channel called the Infrared. Let me see. What is it called? The World Infrared Sky Alliance, which is people that go out and film in the infrared. That's what they specialize in. There's some incredible stuff out there, Kevin. Blow you away. So, I've incorporated in this. And in it, there are we call them dropas.
Yeah.
That's what David Sarita and, other people are calling these things. They're living organisms type of things. I mean, Trevor James Constable called them critters, you know. Even Scott Carpenter, one of the astronauts, says, you know, after John Glenn was up there and we started seeing these things, we were not surprised that there were these critters that were flying around us, you know. And I think they're living organisms that live up there. And the Army has been trying to kill them with the chemtrail stuff. I believe that they're out there, the Air Force actually said, we're spraying aluminum oxide or barium or whatever it is that they're spraying up in the upper atmosphere because we're trying to kill bacteria that exists in the upper atmosphere. The Air Force stated that blatantly. And there's been rainfall of gelatinous things falling, you know, gelatin, jelly-like substance. I think they're trying to kill them, you know. And it's been a whole thing with NASA. Donna Hare said, look, we're always trying to get rid of these critters, man, these little pesky creatures that are up there that are following us around everywhere. They're trying to get rid of them. And there's just thousands and thousands of them up there. And I think that's what this footage reveals, is these things, and they're invisible, they're translucent. They exist in the ultraviolet and infrared spectrums. Matter of fact, at the beginning, the new beginning of my film, UFO, The Greatest Story of the United, Part 1, I present Trevor James Constable, who went on a plane from San Jose, from Long Beach to San Jose, and he put on an 18A filter on his 8mm camera. Now, this was in the 50s. Now, an 18A filter, for all of those that are listening, it's a black piece of glass, basically. And it only allows anything that illuminates within the ultraviolet spectrum to appear. So when you put this filter on any camcorder, or in Trevor's case, he did it on an 8mm camera, shot 8mm film, and he set it up to shoot at 2 frames per second so he could get better exposure. When he put the 18A filter on the 8mm camera and he shot out the window, he was sitting near the wing, shot out the window, everything turns pitch black because this filter just totally eliminates all visible light. Suddenly, there's this big red orb, and it's one of these Dropa things that starts flying around the wingtip. It shows up in pitch black, but it's in that light spectrum. And then a whole incredible, in one frame, there's a whole incredible amount of light that just appears. And there's things all over the place, man. It's like looking under an aquarium tank, and you're seeing all these UFOs, man. But they're in the invisible light spectrum of the ultraviolet. Everything's pitch black, except for this one frame of 8mm film, and then this footage. You'll see it. It opens my movie. And it's just incredible about the whole evidence that there's a complete life structure that exists in these invisible light spectrums that exist among us.
All right, now let me throw something at you and just get your response to it. You know, on the one hand, there are times when people have accused me of being anti-environment, and that's usually when I'm saying drill for oil. If you know where there is some, drill. But then on the other hand, I'm very pro environment, but I think, you know, pro in the sense of, you know, we have to balance it. We have to have good sense about certain things. And there are times when we just have to do something. But having said that, you know, if these things are in our atmosphere and they're swarming all around the Earth out there in space, they quite obviously have been out there and have been in our atmosphere for a lot longer than we knew. I mean, they were out there when we finally got the type of cameras where we could see them. So they were there before that. And it's just possible that these things are doing something that helps keep this planet alive. I'm not real sure it's smart for us to be trying to kill them. What do you think?
I don't think they can kill them. I think what's happening is that perhaps they're hurting some of them. But these things, whatever they are, anything that could exist within a light spectrum. Imagine this, Kevin. We're not talking about an the atmosphere is basically an ocean, just like our regular oceans, and it's not as dense as the regular ocean.
Mm-hmm.
And granted, there could be type of sky fish, as they call them, existing there. But imagine this. This is a group of bio entities, okay, that exist in a light spectrum. My God, do you know what that means? It's a light spectrum. It's not a physical, wet area where these things are. This is in a light spectrum that these things exist, and they thrive. And we don't know what they eat. We don't know what their cultural existence is all about. We don't know if they're actual human-type organisms or beings. I mean, we know that they're intelligent because they can do certain acrobatics and things. But this is—it's like the electron microscope, Kevin. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Without the electron microscope, we would never have known the worlds that exist in the realm of the very small and in the microscopic areas. I saw an electron microscope photograph, and I wish I could have seen it. I remember seeing it. I go, wow, that's pretty cool, and I just fluffed it off. But there was in this one little tiny, and I'm talking electron microscopic planet, there were things that looked human, and they had two legs, two arms, and a head.
Well, on that note, we have to step away for a break. We'll be back right after this. We are back, and my guest is Jose Escamilla. Jose, almost every living creature in the ecosystem is doing something that somewhere along the way is beneficial to the health of the planet.
Yes, even a sponge.
Even a sponge. Yeah.
Yeah, has benefit for us. I mean,
so these things, whatever they are, they're living in our atmosphere and the space out there surrounding Earth, and as you said, in our atmosphere, they've been photographed flying right alongside of jets. If they are living entities, then they are part of the ecosystem. There must be something they do that contributes to the health of the planet.
I believe so. I mean, planet Earth and the universe that we live in, we're all in a balanced universal state. I mean, the Earth is in perfect balance with the moon, for example. When NASA sent this probe up there to crash into the moon or to explode a weapon onto the moon, we don't know what they really did. It's upsetting the balance between Earth and the Moon. I mean, who are we to launch that kind of an attack on the Moon that's been there for millions of years, billions of years for all we know? And here NASA, the little stupid idiots that are there, oh, we're looking for water. No, Andy already said there's water there, guys. You guys missed Blue. But there's a perfect balance between planet Earth and the Moon and the other planets that we exist among. And who are we to disrupt the perfect balance and the organisms that exist there that have probably contributed to keeping Earth safe? You know, for all we know, these creatures that exist in this light spectrum, the invisible light spectrums, maybe what they're doing is that's part of Mother Earth's, blood plasma or bloodstream, It's like the white and the red corpuscles, in the human body. Maybe that's what these things are. The rods, I've always thought that the rods were perhaps, you know, healing the earth from what we're doing against it, along with these other organisms. I mean...
Well, I mean, you know, there's every possibility, isn't there, that these things, maybe they eat and consume some of the greenhouse gases.
Yeah, we just don't know. You know? Mm-hmm. And because scientists do not address this, and because NASA and then are not telling, you know, the world public, and I'm going to say the world public because, you know, us here in America with NASA and the space program and all that, and the scientists that we have here, you know, the whole world tunes into us and given them insights on what's happening, you know, on our planet. And here, instead of NASA telling us the truth, they've lied to us. You know, and they've kept hidden. They've suppressed the information that we're supposed to have known.
Well, I think the world used to tune into us. I'm not so sure they tune into us now. Do you know, and I never thought I would ever say this, but do you know one of the best places to find out what's really going on around the world in terms of news? It's not CNN. It's not Fox. It's not MSNBC, ABC, CBS, all of those. One of the very best places to find out what's happening around the world is CCTV. From China.
Absolutely.
And the interesting thing, when they report the news, they just report the news. They don't editorialize it.
Yeah, they don't have any spin on it. They say, hey, here's what's up.
Yeah.
And then that's exact truth. I mean, that's a real truth right there, you know?
It used to be, I used to tune in to BBC. But they've
been infiltrated.
Yeah, they're not much different now than what the garbage we've got here in this country.
Right before 9/11 happened, the BBC had produced and was going to air. Exactly, they were going to air a whole expose on the Bush Nazi connections and how the Bush family was dealing with. You know, terrorists and everything else. I mean, there was a TV special that was coming out. So what happens? 9/11 happens to squash that one. You know, suddenly all you hear about is 9/11. But there was a BBC special that was coming out. And I remember it because I said, finally they're presenting the truth about these, you know, this crime family, you know, that's running our country, man. I remember that specifically.
Look, it goes way deeper than that. There's more than just that that connection. I mean, oh well, that's a subject for another show. But
yeah.
You know, I let me put it this way. I speak nine languages. I'm fairly fluent in about seven of them, but one language I've never been able to learn is DC speak, because you have to think backwards and inside out in order to understand the meaning of the words they're saying.
Wow.
DC speak.
Yeah, well,
that's Washington political speak.
Yeah, Washington DC speak, man. I haven't even fathomed that there was any kind of a dialogue there, that type, man. You have to,
yeah, you hear the words and they sound like English. you hear their words, see, and they sound like English, but then you have to turn them inside out and run them in reverse to get the definitions.
Wow. Yeah, you're going to have to indoctrinate me, man. Check it out. But anyway.
Back to these things that were around the tether.
Yeah.
One of the things that I wonder about, you know, the doggone tribe over in Mali, in Western Africa, Northwest Africa. They are very, very, very interesting people. They say that some people came from a star, Sirius C, which our astronomers didn't even know existed. They said that this makes a very long elliptical orbit around its the main star, which would be Sirius A, and it takes 50 years for it to go around. Well, when our astronomers finally discovered it, they said, well, yeah, that's exactly right. It does. Now, they said that these folks that came from Sirius, from the Sirius star system, said they came to Earth, and they said they were sort of half fish, half human, which sounds too fantastic to believe, and that their spaceships were like capsules of water.
Interesting.
Now, you were talking about these droppa, these things around the tether, perhaps being the cause of this gelatinous matter that has fallen to Earth after they spray the chemtrails. I wonder, is it possible that what those are these capsules of water?
Yeah, pretty amazing. Pretty amazing, man.
You know, if so, then that would mean that we've got a whole bunch of space travelers from Sirius C flying around out there in space and in our atmosphere. And you know, I just wonder if that's what they are.
You never know. That's the thing. That's the whole thing about this. Just don't know.
All right, now
I got to make an announcement before we have to go because we only have, what, 4 minutes?
Well, until we open up the phone lines then.
Oh, okay, cool.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Yeah, go ahead and make the announcement.
Well, here's the thing. I am premiering UFO The Greatest Story Ever Tonight in HD, okay?
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to premiere it on YouTube. I don't know the date yet. Probably maybe around the 30th or 31st of March. It's going to be available on pay-per-view. And as a rental on YouTube and other channels, we're talking with Netflix. They're very interested in it. It's going to be available on Amazon as a download. And the big thing, now, Kevin, you were with us last year when we opened Moon Rising at the Emmys Theater, right?
That's correct.
You were there, and I am so glad you were. You know, you interviewed me and a bunch of other people, and got response from people before and after the event.
Jose, the break just took over. When we come back, I want you to do that announcement. Hang on, we'll get it when we come back. All right, folks, we'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. For those of you joining us just now in this second hour, welcome aboard. We're glad to have you. My guest this evening is Jose Escamilla. And Jose, when we went away for break, you were making an announcement and the break caught us. So I want you to be able to make that announcement. Are you with us? Well, yeah, we can hear you now.
Man, that's weird. Anyway, last year we premiered Moon Rising at the Emmys Theater, okay? You were there, and as I was saying earlier, I'm glad you were there. You got to interview people before and after they watched the film, you know, the premiere.
Mm-hmm.
And my thing is I want to bring the general public into our phenomena. I mean, you and I and quite a few of us other researchers and investigators, we already know what's happening, but JQ Public has no clue, okay, unless it's attached with a rap star or a American Idol press conference or something like that. They don't have a freaking clue what's going on in the world, you know, much less within the UFO phenomenon.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this time around, we are presenting, we're going to premiere UFO The Greatest Story Ever Tonight, Part 1, at the Kodak Theater. This is where the Oscars were held just recently. Academy Awards. And the reason I'm doing this is because I want to bring, you know, the attention of the regular public and the media to not only the film, but what the film represents. you know.
Mm-hmm.
You got Stephen Greer and Stephen Bassett out there trying to get disclosure made within the Washington, D.C. speak, as you call it. You know, Washington, D.C. circles are trying to break out and have Congress, you know, admit that there's something going on and listen to all this evidence. But what I'm doing is I'm doing Hollywood on the UFO phenomenon. And last year was the first time that a UFO-related documentary was presented in a theater such as the Emmys Theater. So this year we're going to do it at the Oscars Theater, man, and you're going to be there with us. You know, we'll see to it you're there with us. And I'm going all out. And this time we're planning it really, really fantastic. We're going to have sponsors. We're going to have the Klieg lights, the Hollywood lights. We're going to have a walk, you know, a red carpet thing, the whole enchilada, man. And it's what the phenomenon deserves. You know, we need to bring awareness to the fact that UFOs are real. All right? These creatures that are out there, the NASA, the other things, everything that we represent within this film, the general public has to become aware of it. And this is what I think has been a big clog in the whole mainstream thing with the media, is they fence it off as a joke. You know, they say it's ridicule and all that kind of stuff. Well, this film eliminates all that. It presents to you what happened, how the government and the Air Force and the military created the myth around UFOs. They got Carl Sagan, all these scientists in that era that they hired, and they paid them to debunk UFOs, to make it seem that there was no real thing, when in fact they knew the phenomenon was real. I mean, even the Air Force, I mean, we have them in the film. You have Lawrence Tacker who's saying, hey, anyone who reports a UFO to the authorities is a patriotic citizen that has seen something. I mean, they were asking people not to talk to the media, but to talk to the Air Force and deliver their stories and everything else. So they knew it was a real phenomenon. They just didn't admit that they could not control it. And when the Battle of Los Angeles occurred, it was the first time that the military fired on a UFO, and they found out, guess what? There's nothing we can throw at these things that can stop them. And that's why they created the myth about UFOs. And they lied to the American public and the world public since 1942. That was way before the 1947 crash. And in 1942, during the Battle of Los Angeles, was the first time that the balloon explanation was put into effect. So that's what this film has. It has it all in there in a concise manner. And I'm glad I made this movie, Kevin, because, like I said, I was not too happy with what I saw on ABC that time. And I said, you know, it's time to make a movie that spells it all out and tells the truth, man. They're lying to us again, you know. And now it's come full circle. We have incredible new infrared footage that you're going to freak when you see this stuff, Kevin. You know, these people are shooting out there with the current technologies. And
well, I'm glad. I need to freak at least once a week.
Well, this film is definitely, I'm really proud of it. I'm really happy, and I'm glad that we're going to present it not only on YouTube. I'm glad we've come full circle. I mean, we now have venues where we can present the film, you know, whereas in 2006, I was only limited and paying out the nose for a server that I could not keep from being hacked. But nowadays, it's happening, and I'm really glad that the film has the following it already has, and now it's just going to be even better. It's a better film to watch.
Outstanding. Well, look, I'll tell you what I'd like to do. I'd like to open up the telephone lines and invite our audience to join us by calling in with their questions or comments. The telephone number, the main number here in the studio, is 623-444-5889. If you can call that number without it costing you a long distance fee, please use that number. Now, if it is going to cost you a long distance fee, then please use our toll-free number. It is 888-223-4599. So if you have a question or if you have a comment for Jose Escamilla, that's the way to get in touch with us. Also, if you happen to live outside of the USA and you live outside of Canada, you don't want to make that international long-distance call? Well, you can use the flash message option. by going to our website at kevinsmithshow.com and scroll down. You'll see a link that says flash message, all right? And that will get your question or your comment in front of my eyes, and we'll read it on the air and go from there. Jose, you know, you kind of shook the world when you produced the film about rods. Mm-hmm. And, of course, there have been lots of folks debunking, you know, trying to debunk that. And yet there they are, these rods. Now, with this film, especially with this updated version, you're adding to rods, you're adding drompa, and these things can be gigantic, can't they? I mean, in that tether footage, some of these things are like, what, 15 miles across?
Yeah. They're huge. The tether was, when it was finally fully extended and it was out 80 or 90 miles away from the shuttle, even though it was lit up like a firecracker, man, and it was 12 miles long. Imagine, there was an object, well, there were many objects, these drova things, they were flying around the tether at certain areas, and a third of it, okay, a third of the diameter of one of the optics, you know,
mm-hmm.
a third the size of that tether, 12 miles. So imagine, you know, in diameter, that optic was huge. And it was living. It was a living, breathing in a vacuum type of thing, whatever it was, and invisible on top of everything else. So these drova things and these UFO things are incredible. You know, the rods phenomenon, Monster Quest did a number on me, and so did the other one, what was it called, Proof Positive. You know, these are debunking shows, but I'm still debating. I haven't finished completely the film. I might add this segment within the rods segment, but I don't know. I don't want to, you know, break into the integrity of the way the film was made in the first place. The reason I added a thing about the dropas and the tether incident is because it's an important fact that needs to be realized by the American public and the world public, that History Channel and UFO hunters deliberately try to debunk the fact that these things are there, right? They try to pass it off as light, lens refractions, and everything else. I mean, the Ross phenomenon, believe me, it's real. And I've got a Ross film that I'm making, and as soon as I ever get the funding, I'm going to have Tiger Woods in my movie, pal. You know, there's rods flying all over Tiger Woods in broad daylight, and also in the Nike commercial. Nike wants like $35,000 for the, you know, the little 30-second spot for me to use that footage of the rod that flies through 5,000 frames per second. You know, and eventually that's going to come out. But
well, you need to tell them that's fine. You want $70,000 to advertise their Nike in your film.
Yeah, well, it's going to come full circle. I mean, all these circle jerks that have surrounded me and tried to say, well, they're nothing but insects. Guess what? Guess who gets the last laugh? I do.
I bet you do. Let's go to the telephone and caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Stefan from Quebec City, Kevin.
Hi, Stefan.
Hi. Great show. Mr. Escamilla, are we certain or do we have any reasonable conviction that these might actually be creatures? I mean, something that big. I mean, if you look at whales, I know they live in pods, but I mean, they need a really big space to live in and to eat.
Well, you know, we haven't really seen what exists in the ultraviolet and infrared light spectrum. Remember, these things are invisible. This is a complete new reality, a new dimension that we haven't even fathomed. We haven't even explored it yet. Okay, so we don't know what these things eat. We don't know what they think. We don't know how they communicate. We just know that they're there, according to this footage and other footage. I mean,
but how do we know that they're creatures?
Well, we don't, do we? They
no.
display a behavior that appears to be of a living entity of some kind. You know, for all we know, maybe this is what souls look like after they leave Earth.
Well,
we don't know.
the whole thing really got me thinking, because if you look at modern day vehicles, I mean, they're no longer just cars. They're computers on wheels. And if artificial intelligence becomes a part of that later on, I mean, our cars by themselves might be alive in the future.
Well, that's true, too. But see, we're talking about artificial intelligence. This is an intelligence that has existed among us for perhaps billions of years. We haven't seen them. The only time we were afforded a view of these things was when the NASA tether footage came out. Okay?
But do we know...
Up until that time.
But do we know that they come from Earth? Couldn't they be extraterrestrial from other systems as well? In that case, they could be artificial?
We have no idea. That's the whole case surrounding the tether incident, is that by accident, NASA captured this stuff.
Now, I just find it fascinating. I'm really looking forward to your movie, Mr. Erickson. Is there any chance of getting it in French at some point?
In French?
Yeah, because I'm trying to enlighten the other my fellow Quebecers here.
You know, if you know of anyone that could translate it for me, I would be delighted, you know, to present them with a transcript so that we could put it in French. I mean, I've had my Moon Rising film turn into Polish, into German, and different languages, Latin languages, by people that decided that, dude, we have to have this film in Spanish and in German and stuff. So, yeah, by all means, if you know of anyone that would like to contribute, you know, I can't pay anything at this point, but I'd love to have it in all languages, of course, you know.
Well, thank you very much for your hard work, and great show, Kevin. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. 623-444-5889. That's the main number, 623-444-5889. Or toll free, 888-223-4599. You know, Jose, you know that I have a book that I published a couple of years back. It's called Gods in the Garden. And at that time, we had a guy living in Canada that was a big fan of this show. His name was Michelle. And he got a copy of this book. And every day he would meet with some of his buddies at the coffee shop, and my book is in English, but he would translate it and read it to them in French so that they could get the book too. I didn't have a French translation, but he was doing it at the coffee shop. And I tell you, I really, really miss Michelle. He passed away from a heart attack a couple of years ago, but... what a great guy. All right, let's go to the telephone. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Yeah, good evening, gentlemen. It's Terry from Ohio.
Hello, Terry.
Hi, Kevin. When's the second Gods in the Garden coming out?
I don't know. I work on it a little bit every once in a while. I have the title done.
Oh, okay. I thought he was getting close there, so it's been a while. Been looking for it.
Well, maybe someday. Maybe someday.
Okay. I seen what makes him think that. Did he say that he thinks that these chemtrails that we're actually trying to attack and kill these things? And you know.
Well, I don't know. Ask him.
Did I hear him correctly?
I actually stated that the Air Force agreed or admitted that the reason they're spraying chemicals in the upper atmosphere is they're trying to kill bacteria that exists up there. Okay? Now, we don't know if these things are considered bacteria, but the Air Force admitted they're doing that. That's what they're spraying up there. We're killing bacteria, harmful bacteria that exists up there. Okay? So if you're talking about killing bacteria, maybe these things are considered a bacteria of some kind. But for them to admit that they're spraying out, they're killing living organisms. Bacteria is, in fact, a living organism, isn't it?
Yeah.
So that tells me, I mean, and they're blatant about it. They say, yeah, we're spraying out, we're killing bacteria. Okay, well, these things, now again, I reiterate, they exist in the ultraviolet infrared zones, light spectrum. They are unseen. They're invisible. They're invisible. So maybe they found out through chance that they can kill these things by spraying barium oxide or aluminum oxide or whatever it is that the chemicals are spraying up there. Maybe this harms them. know, destroys them.
Yeah,
they're obviously a pesky, as the lady said, man, they're pesky little critters, creatures that exist in the upper atmosphere, these creatures, you know. And that's what the guy told her, you know. He said, we airbrush these things out, you know, these pesky little creatures. That's what we're trying to get rid of. So maybe they're harmless. Maybe they're just, like I said, man, or like Kevin said, maybe they are part of the ecological system that planet Earth has. Mother Earth. I think Mother Earth is a living entity. Now, I don't believe Mother Earth is nothing but a rock with clouds and oceans in it. You know, Mother Earth supports life. So she's a living entity. We are the mites that are on Mother Earth's surface or her skin, and we're screwing it up, aren't we? Or we're allowing the idiots to do it. So anyway, that's my theory, and you know, don't take my word for granted, man.
Yeah, I didn't know that they were emitting that those chemtrails or anything, but jet fumes was all I heard they were emitting. They were. I also did see, which was surprising, on the History Channel, UFO files, and they were investigating that Tether thing, and they had a NASA scientist on there, and he showed, you know, which is. Not like most of their crap, you know, that they show stuff and it's, you know it's bull. He really showed how that those round things could really, he did it on film right then and there in front of everybody and reproduced the same thing in front of everybody in a, you know, in a little box, you know, with a pencil and, you know, in a line, and how the camera, you know, would reflect and do that stuff. And, you know, and it looked just like it. It was kind of amazing.
Yeah,
it was about the only thing I ever...
Okay, Terry, you got to hang on and let him respond.
Okay.
Yeah, here's what I did on the film, is I debunked the debunking that UFO hunters did. This is what I said earlier in the interview, is that the guy is not a NASA scientist. As a matter of fact, I know the guy. His name is John Tyndall. He's a guy that lives here in Woodland Hills, and they hired him to come in and try to, using smoke and mirrors, try to replicate what one of these things, and I'm reiterating, one of these things might look like if it was a lens flare or a reflection, okay, caused by the glass of the shuttle and the camera aperture setting and all that. However, and this is what I explain in the movie, in the new version, the remake, is they failed to announce that these things are in the ultraviolet and infrared zone. That means they're invisible. So anything this guy did, and I like John, he's a cool guy, but everything that he presented there would be impossible to replicate in space. Why? Because these things are in the ultraviolet infrared zone. That means they are invisible to the naked eye, and they are huge, and they are not ice, and it's not light reflections or anything else. It would not have registered in the vacuum of space.
Here's another thing. If it's caused by a lens flare or a reflection in the lens, then, okay, let's say we have 10 of those that show up. That would be very, very weird. You would not get 10 of those in one shot. But let's say you had them. They would all move in concert as the camera jiggles.
Exactly.
Okay, these things in the Tether film are moving all different directions.
Yeah.
But anything that's an artifact of the photography will all have to move in concert and in the same direction. So as the camera jiggles to the right, everything that you're seeing jiggles to the right.
Yes.
All right. I'm sorry?
That's not the case, because what I present in the film is a complete Tether expose. I mean, when you put motion tracking onto each individual object, you see that it's not ice crystals. Ice crystals do not behave that way. If they were ice crystals and they say, well, it was just for the booster, the ice crystals would fly away. They would not be intermixing and doing maneuvers at 17,500 miles per hour. You know, 80 miles away, 90 miles away from the cameras, it would not appear on film.
Well, they also would not fly. They also would not fly away and then turn around and come back.
Exactly. And see, this is why NASA has deliberately lied to you. UFO hunters, you know, like I said, I know Bill Byrne, he's a friend, but I don't know why they did that episode to try to debunk it. Maybe they were told to do that by History Channel. Who knows? Who cares? You know, the bottom line is they lied, you know? And Dr. Jack Kasher was there looking at this guy doing the smoke and mirrors thing, and he's like, wow, Jose, man, this is blew me away. Well, of course, but you know what? You're a physicist. You're not a camera guy, you know? And unfortunately, they blew it out of the water, and they messed up, man, because there's no way, Jose. I love
it. Well, you know, but again, you know, I saw that. But while it is possible to reproduce an effect and get one or two or maybe even three of these as a lens flare or reflection, it is not possible to have a lens flare or reflection respond in the same way as those things in the tether did, in the tether film.
Plus in the ultraviolet zone.
Well, that's see, and that's important because what we saw in the UFO hunters version of it,
yeah,
all of that is dependent upon light and being visible.
Visible light spectrum. That's the whole argument.
All right, we have to step away for a break. We'll be back right after this, and the phones will be open for you. Welcome back. My guest this evening is Jose Escamilla. Jose, let me just check. Did you make it through this break? Okay, we don't have Jose. I don't know what the deal is, but there he is.
Hello?
We've got you.
Weirdness surrounds us. That's weird.
Okay. 623-444-5889 is the number to call. Or if you need to call me on the toll-free line, you may do so at 888-223-4599. Jose, do you think, you know, in a lot of sci-fi movies, old sci-fi movies as well as a few recent sci-fi movies, we see these space creatures that sort of attach themselves to a spaceship and begin to react to the metal as though they're made of acid, and they begin to eat through it and stuff like that. Do you think that there's any danger to, for instance, the International Space Station or to any of our shuttles? Is there any danger to them from these critters?
Well, you know, it's like us going into Africa and entering into the domain of the lions, okay? Is there any danger towards us? I mean, lions are wild creatures. You know,
mm-hmm.
We don't know their demeanor. We know that in a zoo, they're placid, you know, they're domiciled, you know, or they're just, you know, they're sitting there and bored to death.
Yeah.
You go into the jungle, into the lion's territory, they're going to get you, all right?
So there could be some danger.
Environment.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's go to the telephone. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, Kevin and Jose. This is Victoria, and I'm in Washington State. I'm enjoying the program. Thank you. I do have a question, and you might have talked about this in the top of the show, which I missed the first part, but I was wondering if what was the source of the film? I know it's film from NASA, but how did you figure out that it was in infrared? And then How did you attain it or acquire it, and how do you know it's authentic? And if you could fill me in on that, I'd appreciate it. Thank you.
Okay, Victoria. First of all, are you a first-time caller?
No.
Okay. All right.
I called on a different phone before, but so I'm a second-time caller.
All right. Good deal. Okay, let's get some answers for you.
Well, first of all, the Tether incident was broadcast live on the NASA channel and on CNN. So, and they announced it right there. They said these are infrared, you know, ultraviolet cams, and we're doing tests with this brand new electronics that we're delivering. And there was a whole scenario behind it. Thankfully, Martin Stubbs downloaded this from the original feed, so there was a lot of other footage that was not broadcast. It was actually suppressed by NASA. It was kept from the public eye, and Martin was able to download the whole feed from his little TV station there in Vancouver, Canada. So if it wouldn't have been for Martin Stubbs, this Tether incident would not have really been presented to the world public as it is now, because NASA, when this stuff started happening, they started delaying the broadcast. But in answer to the question, they announced that this was ultraviolet, infrared in the original broadcast. When these things started appearing, naturally they started calling it debris. But the full Tether incident was recorded and presented to the planet by Martin Stubbs. What you saw live was edited on CNN and the NASA channel. They quit broadcasting. So the full-on Tether incident was thankfully presented by Martin Stubbs. All I've done is I reiterated what's there, and I've presented it, you know, trying to debunk the debunkers that are trying to say it's nothing but ice debris. That's where that is.
Well, you know, I guess the part of the problem is, you know, if a UFO of any type were to land, we'll say it's a UFO that's a vehicle that has occupants. If it lands, the occupants get off of the UFO, go out in the crowd that gathers, sign some autographs, take people for a few joy rides around and land again, and it's all on live TV, you're still going to have debunkers in the debunking business.
Yeah, you're going to have people that are not going to believe it. They're going to still insist it was fake or it's not real. It's mass hysteria. The Earth is flat. The Earth is not round. The Earth is flat. And that's what you get from these, you know, idiots that are out there. But we know better. It's just that junkie public has to be turned on to what's going on rather than, I mean, they've, you know, JQ public, which is the majority, let's face it. You know, we've got people that are in their 20s. That 20 years ago, you know, were indoctrinated with the internet and everything else, man. They came into their live stream already internet babies, man.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they know nothing about the JFK assassination or Martin Luther King. They know nothing about the Beatles in the 60s other than what they're presented on TV and radio.
Mm-hmm.
They have no idea what's going on, you know. So it's the indoctrination of the ignorance that is out there. And this,
well, that's true. Well, that's because we have mushroom media here.
Now, if it wasn't for the internet, Kevin, everybody would be blind, literally.
Do you remember a couple of years ago, the Department of Defense or the Ministry of Defense in Mexico released a video that was taken by one of their airplanes using FLIR, which is forward-looking infrared, and it showed UFOs around one of their planes.
Yes.
And I think there was a total of 11 UFOs, and they took up different formations and so forth. These were the reason the plane was where it was is because they picked this stuff up on radar, and they thought it might be drug runners.
Yeah,
and
it was a drug runner plane that was trying to find infrared, infrared signature.
Well, they first picked them up on radar, and they flew to the location, and ground radar picked them up too. They flew to the location where radar said these were, and they couldn't see anything. They saw no aircraft. And so they turned the FLIR on, and there they were, in infrared. All right, now, what happened was the same thing that has happened with the Tether video, with the Tether film. And for those of you who've been listening to the show for quite a while, you remember when this happened, and as soon as that video came out, I did a show and told you, watch for the spin. Here's what they're going to do. And I listed some things to watch for. And sure enough, within 24 hours, that started. Now, here's the main thing they did with it. And you can still see this on YouTube. They reported it in the press here in America, and they reported it as Mexican Air Force crew sees bright lights and thinks they're UFOs.
In the Gulf, yeah.
Okay, now see, that is an absolute lie. They never saw anything. Never. It was invisible.
It was invisible, yes.
Okay, so these were not bright lights. This was forward-looking infrared film. Okay, FLIR, just like we use on our military aircraft. And so it was infrared. Nobody could see it. It showed up on radar, ground radar, and radar from the aircraft. But they never saw it.
One of the funniest debunking things that they tried to get off, and like I go and say, JQ Public probably bought it. If I said, oh, that's all it was, because they have no clue, right?
Mm-hmm.
But one of the funniest ones was they showed this one guy on a plane flying sort of the same route that the military plane was flying, and he's got a camcorder. He says, this is all they saw. And he's filming some oil rigs that are out in the Gulf of Mexico,
mm-hmm.
right? He says, that's all it was. Of course, they didn't show the video that he was filming of the oil rigs, the lights, you know, that they emitted. And, of course, they did not show the infrared video of the same lights. But they just had this snapper head sitting there on this airplane window, putting his camera out the window, says, oh, that's it. See, I see the lights over there of the oil rigs. But they never showed the footage. They just showed him saying it.
Yeah, and, you know, that I remember that. And one of the things that debunker slid past the public is that these UFOs went around in front of the plane, then they went around behind the plane, off to the left, off to the right. Oil rigs would have a difficult time doing that.
Yeah, and there was one UFO that came at the plane.
Yeah.
Did you ever see that footage? I've got that footage. I got it from Jaime Maussan. There's one of these UFOs that broke formation. Remember, there was 11 of them traveling, you know, between the clouds and everything else. But one of them broke formation and just came straight at the plane. And it was right there, man. It was huge, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But it was invisible. And that's the whole thing, is people aren't aware that everything that they're seeing there and that they're trying to debunk is that these things are invisible.
Well, yeah, a lot of them are. A lot of them. But there are a lot of visible UFOs as well that they try to debunk. And, you know, it's very, very difficult to tell me there's no such thing as alien spacecraft when, I don't know if you're going to be able to hear this, Jose, but I'm going to play something here. Whenever I hear an astronaut say, we still have the alien spacecraft under observance, here it is.
Questa è una registrazione radio dello shuttle, decodificata o passata in chiaro per errore.
We are retransmitting the Space Shuttle Air to Ground Communication from Mission 20. This is WA3NAN.
Houston, this is Discovery. We still have the alien spacecraft under observance.
Okay, there it is. Houston, this is Columbia. We still have the alien spacecraft under observance. And then somebody wants to tell me there's no such thing as alien spacecraft?
Yeah.
That's ridiculous.
And, you know, there's an enormous amount of transcripts that the public has not been privy to. The actual NASA transcripts, you know, the transmissions between the astronauts that were flying around the moon. And they were talking about hearing music.
Yeah.
On the far side of the moon, you know. They were hearing music. They said, man, do you hear that? And the guy says, yeah. He says, man, they're not going to believe this. This sounds just like Star Trek music, man. Can you hear that? I mean, these guys are in the capsule, you know, orbiting the moon, and they're hearing this music coming from somewhere in space.
Yeah.
And, you know, of course, JQ Public is not privy to this because it's in a transcript, and we don't know where to look to find this stuff, but we found it. You know, there's people out there that are doing research. Hoagland, Richard Hoagland, Mike Vera, myself.
All right, we have to step away for break. We'll be back right after this. We're back, and we are on Final Approach. That means, of course, that we only have a few minutes left. If you wish to call and ask a question or make a comment, we have time for one, perhaps two, pretty quick calls. So if you've been thinking you want to call in, now's the time. Jose, are you still with us?
Yes, am I? Am I there?
Yes, you are. Okay. You know, the thing about these debunkers that we're talking about, it doesn't bother me at all for someone to use the real facts and test the real facts. That doesn't bother me. But what I see time after time after time are these debunkers. I wish I had a polite name that was a little worse than, okay, jackasses. They manufacture a set of parameters that did not exist. And within this manufactured set of parameters, then they produce something that looks similar to what we saw. But if you have the parameters that existed, for instance, if it was not visible to the naked eye and it was caught on infrared film, then that's what you have to use. Those are the parameters. They don't do that. They manufacture parameters to come up with special effects.
Yeah, they don't do that, and they deliberately do that to the public, which is stupid enough to believe them. And,
well,
you know, the public is just so dumbed down that they believe everything that they're presented, and the debunkers deliberately do this knowing that they can pull the wool over people's eyes. And, you know, that's unfortunate. A lot of naive people out there that just believe everything you see on a tube is fact when it's, in fact, a lie. Yeah, I know what you're saying, you know.
Yeah, and, you know, but if they use the actual parameters that existed and within those parameters can show that, okay, it wasn't a UFO, it was this something else, that's fine, not a problem. I'm not a UFO believer. You know, you've heard me say it many times. What is there to believe? That's not, either they exist or they don't. And so if it turns out that it's not a UFO, then okay, it's not. No big deal, no harm done. And
but it is. Tell us what it is. That's,
yeah.
The truth.
Mm-hmm.
You know? But they're not. They're deliberately lying. You know, they're making up stuff as they go along. But I know exactly what you're saying. And unfortunately, a lot of people out there believe this maniacal flat earther, you know, explanations, man. But it goes with the territory, doesn't it?
Yeah, you know, it's I say again that if you just look at all, not just a few, but all of the so-called mainstream media on television, look at every one of them and ask yourself, how can any of them be believed? But, you know, the problem is we do have so many people who it's like they have blinders on and they can't look outside of those blinders. And within those blinders is the news they get from lamestream media.
Yep.
But if you ever take those blinders off, you find out, hey, doggone, the world is a whole lot different than they told us.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It's just that the films that I'm doing and other people, James Fox, other people are making these movies. It's not only me. I just happen to be making this one particular film that dispels all the crap that has been pushed upon the world public. But it takes getting this out there to the mainstream that is a tough nut to crack. And I think that once we do this Hollywood premiere, Devin, and you're there with us, JQ Public will be able to get in there and see what's going on for the first time. Because up until now, my films and anyone else's films are part of the fringe areas of, the documentaries out there. You know, it's a fringe mm-hmm. science. There's no such thing as UFOs. That's the way they've been trained.
Mm-hmm.
But
listen, before we get too far afield, because I have scorched the media pretty severely tonight, and I do frequently, and I make no apology for that because it's absolutely true. However, let me say this. MSNBC, not particularly noted for presenting unbiased information, but MSNBC, in reporting on these lights that have been appearing above Lake Erie, have reported the ones that I have seen have been straight. No chuckle and no slant, just report it, and it is what it is. And I think they're to be congratulated for that. So I don't want to let that pass. Look, we're almost out of time. When is this film going to be released?
Okay, right now the movie will probably be released on pay-per-view by Monday. And it's going to be on YouTube rental for $9.99. It's going to be on my TBLN channel for $9.99 pay-per-view. And I got to repay my budget, dude. You know, I put out so much money in the last 2 years. But did a summer there. I am premiering it on YouTube for free. I think for about 3 days. I don't know the date yet, but it's going to be on YouTube worldwide for free for all to see UFO, the greatest story ever denied in HD. And if I get, and this is your listening audience, if I get enough people to view the movie for free, and I want millions of people to watch it, not a few thousand, if I get enough people there, I will make it available on YouTube for free forever. Okay? So, I mean, I've got advertising shut in it, and I've got to make my money back. I've spent close to $700,000 over the last 6 years making my films, and I got to recoup that money. It came out of my pocket.
Mm-hmm.
People don't realize it takes money to make these movies. You know, you just don't do them for free.
Well, and this type of documentary is not easy to get investors.
Thank you very much. And
yeah.
Distribution. You know, you won't mm-hmm. see my movies on History Channel or Sci-Fi Channel because all they present is watered-down UFO stuff. I present the good, man, and I don't pull no punches. You know me, Kevin.
That's true.
I don't pull any punches when I put the stuff out there. This is what it is. This is how they're screwing us, you know? And you'll not see my movies on Sci-Fi Channel and History Channel. If you would, it would be watered-down and be just like everything else you see there. And I don't play that game. And unfortunately, it costs me money.
You got to get it back. Jose, we're almost out of time. We're almost to the end of the show. I want to thank you for being with us again. It's been absolutely fascinating. And I'm looking forward to the release of this this new version of UFO, Greatest Story Ever Denied. If you will, just stay on the line with me for a moment, because I'd like to speak with you for a moment or two after we go off the air. Folks, that's something else to look forward to. How about that? You're going to get a shot at the at seeing this movie free when it premieres on YouTube. And then if you miss that, if you miss it, it's still not expensive, $9.99 to see it in pay-per-view. But you do get a shot at seeing it free on YouTube when it premieres. I want to thank everyone who called in tonight. And for everyone who's new and you're thinking, boy, I wish I had called in, so do we. If you've never called us before, give it a try. You'll find out I don't bite. I have yet to eat anyone. All right? So Monday, when we're at this again, you can give us a call. You can be a first-time caller and get those applause for yourself. My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do, too. And you can call me whatever you want to call me. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody.